Well, hello there. My name is HW, and thank you so much for listening to this is episode 65 of the Tone Juggie Podcast. My, my.
65.
How far we've come.
That's a lot of episodes.
Dude, it's a ton of episodes if you think about it. And the video podcast is back.
Here we are.
After a bit of a hiatus.
It was a considerable effort to get this room back to this state.
It really was. Some people have been upset with me about not... You can tell my haircut lady is off for a while. She actually got hurt.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, and she's out of commission for like 10 weeks or something. Ooh. So anyway, it's one of the rare days where I'm not in my floral cap.
Yeah.
You know.
I almost wore one of those.
Not in full floral regalia today. But
it's okay, it's colder here.
Yeah.
The weather is finally behaving, so sweatshirts are a must.
That's right. We're back in uniform.
Yeah.
Is that a new hoodie?
Yeah.
I can tell.
Oh, thanks.
John, okay, listen. The Tone Juggie Podcast is brought to you by the Tone Juggie Loaded Kemper, available exclusively at British Audio. Now you can get all Kempers with a free Tone Junkie everything pack inside. Actually, I'll send it to you. You got to put it inside. If you order from British Audio, and guess how much it costs? The same price as a non-loaded Kemper.
I was going to say $1 million.
Yeah, pretty much. $1 million.
At British Audio a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. What were you doing?
Suze was getting a stage.
That's right. Yeah, they got stages. People are saying the stage is sold out a lot of places, but they have stages. But you usually got to wait like a week.
He had to wait. That's why we went.
Yeah. Like, if you order it, they'll be like, yeah, we're getting more on Friday.
Yeah.
They are kind of constantly sold out a lot of places.
Yeah.
Anyway, so a lot to talk about in the Tone Junkie universe. We're on a mission to profile the world. And you got a Kemper.
I did. Finally.
You've been using the Kemper for...
years.
Yeah, a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Every
Since
Sunday.
Since before you got one, I've been using...
Is that right? I don't believe. Is that right?
Yeah, it is.
It might be. So what's the update on the Kemper? You've got one? You don't have a stage?
No, I don't have a stage. I bought a
That's close enough.
Toaster.
You're still part of the family.
Yeah, what's nice is that, you have a remote I can borrow. Suze has a remote I can borrow.
Yeah. Do you have my remote right now?
I do.
Yeah. How's it going?
It's going great.
See, I didn't even notice it wasn't here.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what I play when you're playing praise and worship almost exclusively, you can kind of set it and forget it.
Yeah.
And, the church has a floor, like a Kemper remote with a little expression pedal. And I just use that, bring my own Kemper, plug it in.
Right.
Eventually, I'll get my performance stored on the Kemper at church, and I can just bring a guitar. That would be nice.
That would be really nice.
But it's it's great. It's perfect.
It's more than enough.
Yeah. I'm using the Bendson profiles. Bendson.
Butterfly?
The Butterfly.
US-2?
I'm using a bunch of them.
Oh, okay.
I'm using US-4 is the cleanest one I use. And then I go all the way up to 7, man.
What guitar are you using?
All of them. Either
every guitar.
Every single guitar.
All the ones in the world.
My main guitars right now are the Japanese Telecaster.
Right,
traditional.
The black one. Yeah.
Oh, man. The Eastman 335 style.
About that. Yeah.
Killer.
Yeah.
And the Cabernita. Which has Filtertrons in it. Fender Filtertrons.
Fidelitrons. Yeah.
I haven't decided. See, so, sold my amp, sold my pedal board.
You took the full plunge.
Sold everything that was on my pedal board. And I bought the Kemper. But more to what I've been up to lately, I bought a drum set.
Right. I did see that on your Instagram, actually.
Yeah.
How's that going?
It's fantastic.
For you.
It's something I've always wanted to do.
What's the dog doing?
He hides. Yeah. I literally find him in our closet, which is upstairs on the complete... It's the furthest away you can be from where my drum set is our closet. And that he hides in there. Poor guy.
Yeah.
I'm probably killing him.
Yeah, they don't like drums.
They don't like loud noises in general.
Also, the cymbals are like high.
Yeah, plus I have like really garbage cymbals because I bought like a Gretsch kit that has everything included. So I actually I put new drum heads on it. I bought real like Remo drum heads.
Yeah.
And they sound a million times better.
Right.
So, and then I just got my refund on the studio monitors that I bought that were way too big. And I'm probably going to get some new cymbals. I'm kind of going deep in the drum thing right now.
Yeah, what's that about? Where did that come from? You just always wanted to play the drums?
Yeah, I think so. My goal is to actually play the drums in front of people.
That's a good goal.
Yeah.
I used to have a goal when I was in a band in San Francisco. My goal, I remember telling the guys when we were recording a little EP, I said, I just want someone to buy this record.
Right.
I just want someone to be like, I value this enough to pay money. And that happened as soon as we were done with the EP. you know what I mean? You sell some, right?
Right.
And then I realized
you had no more goals.
My goals were done. I can retire. I can retire from music. I've achieved my goals. No, but then I realized I needed to work on goal setting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got to shoot a little higher than like something you can do next month.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, because then you do it and you're like, what's, So I'm not terrible at playing the drums, but I'm not great.
Right.
I'm about as good as I thought I'd be.
Right.
And I've been playing pretty much every day for like 3 weeks at this point.
Nice.
But I mean, it should be said, I've been in a band since I was 12.
Yeah.
I know what it's, I know what it should sound like.
Right, right.
So, yeah. Anyway.
So are you using like just a go-to profile, performance? For the weekends, like, have you built one yourself that you're just using all the time, set it and forget it?
Well, I basically took one from the Suze, swapped out the profiles.
Do you know which one?
No.
Just the Suze template, was it?
I don't know what it was.
Did it have a song name on it?
Nope.
It just said...
No help.
Suze.
Yeah, it said, like, Suze...
Probably said Suze template.
I think it was like Suze 3015 or something. I don't know if that's one you've heard. Anyway.
Okay. Who knows what he has? I mean, it might not even be something that we had ever released.
No, I don't think something he had. I don't think it was. Temper. I think it was just something that he used. Swapped out all the profiles. I like my stuff a little drier than he does. So I kind of toned everything down a bit.
Yeah.
Really loving the morph function.
So good, isn't it?
Yeah. It's really great.
The thing that I think gets me about the morph function on the Kemper is that we talk about it like it's one function, but I actually view it as like it's two different things, whether depending on how you use it. So, for example, but obviously you can hook it up to an expression pedal, and that's really cool. You can morph any parameter, right? The value there, though, is getting all the settings in between. Like I used to run a Line 6 M9. And I would take the delays and reverbs and I would have them morphing. They didn't call it morphing, but I would have parameters hooked up to an expression pedal so that at the toe, it was way more wet than I would ever want it. But I would use it for like runaway parts, you know what I mean? But I would almost set it to be too much all the way at the toe so that I had all the access all in between. And depending on the part, I would just sort of feel it out, you know, if I want to be more wet or not.
Right.
But when you use it on the remote, it's really like access to two different settings. You know what I mean? So I've actually, now, I mean, it's a good and a bad because I like having, it like kind of doubles the amount of presets you can have. I mean, true, you can't change the amp, but who's going to use more than 5 amps in a song?
Not in one song. Well, probably not in one song.
Not in one song. 5 amps in one song. Well, songs that have five sections.
Is that a challenge?
And, you know, I would venture to say the vast majority of people are not even going to use 5 different amp tones in one set. You could.
You could, but...
But, I mean, just depending on what you're doing and stuff, but...
I don't.
Yeah, I don't either. But it's like on the remote, I sort of treat it like A or B, where with an expression pedal, I'm more after the in-between settings. You know what I mean? and the sweep of it.
Yeah, I have the Expressions pedal is set up to be just a global volume.
That's what I do too, yeah.
Because that's kind of...
That's like the minimalist worship setup.
Yeah.
Kemper, volume, you're
right.
Done.
Right.
You know?
And basically I have like a... So I have a clean setting that I have yet to actually use.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
It's so weird. Yeah. Well, because if you play...
I have used it, but I'm... Yeah.
If you play lightly,
mm-hmm.
the stuff is really clean.
Right, right.
And then So I always end up using the number two. So everything's like, you know, from clean to mm-hmm. solo, mm-hmm. which I also have not used. And so the number two spot is basically like my normal rhythm, but it's really versatile. The Benson, I think it's five.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, with a telly, if you pick lightly.
Mm-hmm.
And so the morph function is like tons of reverb.
Sure.
Like lasts forever. And so I can just play quietly. It's super clean.
Mm-hmm.
Tons of effect, wash. And with the volume pedal, I mean, I have a swell setting too, but I have not used that either. I really just use number two morphed,
mm-hmm.
and then number three, which is like a little bit more gain.
Are you playing mostly with somebody else?
Yeah, most of the time.
Yeah, that's what lately I've been playing as the only guitar player, mm-hmm. and I've been finding that I need to be more rhythmic than I'm anticipating, because I just started doing the Facebook Live mix at church when I'm not playing.
Oh, interesting.
So yeah, so they built a room for that, and so now we do our own mix for that.
Okay.
So now just watching, so listening back to myself, the live stream sound way better. I can hear it now that there's a new sound system. They built a new building and everything, and now I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to practice. And then now I can really identify.
People can hear me. I got to practice.
Yeah, and doing those mixes, it's like now I really am just sort of paying attention to the difference between when there's two guitars, when there's one guitar, when I'm sitting there with their levels going, like, what do I wish they were doing?
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, how would I? And then at times they do a thing, and I'm like, oh yeah,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're doing different things. But then at times, or then when it's one guitar player, it's like, what do you want out of that?
Mm-hmm.
Is different, even effects wise, it when can be different.
I've only really seen you perform,
mm-hmm.
like, I think one time.
Yeah.
Which is actually really weird.
Yeah.
But when you play, do you find yourself doing more, like, rhythm type stuff, like, lower? Or, like, do you find yourself doing mostly leads and, like, higher, like, triads type of
normal? I'd say mostly higher stuff.
Yeah.
It depends on who I'm playing with.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time now I'm playing by myself. So then I feel like the electric guitar... at times, you know, needs. Really what I'm finding is that I need to think more rhythmically than I'm usually giving it. Like when I'm doing the mix is when I realize like the way it sounds in the church is like, even though in my ears, diamonds make sense. I actually want it to be more driving. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm listening to it going, huh. It's not the biggest chorus at first, but I still want some like higher driving part rather than just diamonds at the top of like a first chorus or something.
So I have this problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a good topic.
Yeah. It's about time we settle into some topic here.
I mean, I don't want to rush us here.
No, we're good.
Have you ever had this experience
mm-hmm.
where your in-ear mix causes you to play worse than you would normally because either you're too loud
mm-hmm.
and you feel like you're out in front of everything and you're nervous
mm-hmm.
or whatever else
yeah.
the case may be. That happened to me recently where like, I think halfway through the first service or something, I'm like, I think I'm just too loud. Like no one out in the audience is hearing me
like
that
this.
Much.
Yeah.
And it's making me play worse.
Yeah, and you're gonna make different decisions. I think that is what I'm finding. Like
yeah.
when you can hear yourself too well, you're going to feel like a simple arpeggio with some delay and reverb somehow has a lot more weight than it really does.
Mm-hmm.
In actuality, no one's hearing you like do this arpeggio through the chord and hearing the sort of fullness of the delay and verb are giving it. They're right. just barely hearing anything you're doing.
Yeah.
It mostly sounds like you're just barely playing. That's why, where I feel like, oh, yeah, when I'm so prominent in my own mix, mm-hmm. I'm making certain decisions that like I can hear the chord ringing out. But when I then am doing the mix, I go, oh, wait a minute. I actually wish my guitar was really tight, higher up, and just sort of playing eighths. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or doing 16, you know what I mean? Like just mm-hmm. and giving me some like driving rhythm, because the acoustic guitar is doing its thing. The bass is down there. The keys are doing their kind of thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I want something somewhere for the electric guitar to sit. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest challenge when you're the only electric guitar player, at least for me. What I'm noticing is how not useful the first position is when I'm listening back. I keep finding myself going, I made the decision to choose fullness. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I could mute this. I made the decision to go, hey, it's a chorus and I'm the only guitar player. I just want to rock on some chords.
Right.
But then,
'cause it feels good.
Yeah.
Right.
But then in the mix when I'm listening, all of a sudden I'm less loud. And really what I'm finding works better is for me to find a tighter spot for the electric guitar to sit in.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of jangly, higher spot. It's not that I can't be heard. It's just that when it's by itself, it blends in a little more. It's the right thing for, I think, like two guitar players.
Yeah, I feel like it gets swallowed up.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the right thing for multiple guitar players. I think one of them should be there.
Right.
Especially when you want more, when you want the dynamics to come up. Mm-hmm. But I feel like you just gotta weigh that out. I think actually listening back to a good live mix of you playing is where you learn the most. Right? We can all play the guitar. Mm-hmm. We can all play these parts on a Sunday, right? And if we can't play them, we're playing some version of them that's close enough that, you know, Becky didn't notice it was different than what you heard on the radio, right? Mm-hmm. But, and even if you take artistic license with it, right? We can all play the guitar. So then the question becomes like, well, how do we sound best? How do we get the best tone? And that's one of the things I'm thinking, I've been feeling like lately is like, part of that tone in the fingers thing is also about the choice of what you're playing and how you're playing it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this weekend I mixed and a guy who's on some of the Kemper groups and he's been in a video or two, Randall Holton, he was playing, you know? And later we were talking about how it sounded tips wise. And he was like, am I too wet? I pulled it back a little. And I was going, no, not at all. You're not too wet. He was going to like a lead on the song Reckless Love. Mm. And he was like, am I too wet? And I'm going, no, in the back half of the song, you're perfect because I can hear there's some space around it and the song's big. But on the front half, you could be more wet because when he first goes into that verse, he's like by himself. Mm. You know what I mean? And it needs to be big and wet and wide, you know, because it's single notey.
Isn't that, I mean... Yeah, that's something in the performances that you've put out. It's like, look, this might sound like it's too wet. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just trust us. Because it gets lost.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it has to be almost overbearing
to
really hear it.
Yeah, the nuance of that is not there. And I think that's a function of just practicing at home. Mm-hmm. You turn yourself loud.
Yeah.
Especially if you're practicing with, I mean, there's another thing. It's really hard to dial in your tone when you're hearing the rest of the band from one source and you from another source.
Yeah.
So if you're sitting there with a monitor or an amp in the room and then you just turn on some computer speakers mm-hmm. and you practice along with that, mm-hmm. it's really much more beneficial to at least get your sound in the same
speaker. What's actually interesting, okay, so now that I have a Kemper, that is my main way of hearing the Kemper also, is through the speakers I have on my desk.
Right.
Right. So when I'm rehearsing by myself and I'm listening to the music and I'm mm-hmm. playing along with it, I'm actually in the mix. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's actually a lot easier to feel like, oh, this doesn't work, or this part of it is not getting heard or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how, I mean, this is just good. This is good advice for anybody who's like starting or, you know, whatever, it hasn't toured professionally or something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, set up a video camera and like go watch it back. It's excruciatingly awkward to watch it.
Yeah.
But it's really important because then that's the only real way that you see what you sound like.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
And yeah, you can learn a lot about yourself.
It's not just guitars, you know. Since we just built this new building and stuff, they're still getting a lot of things dialed in. One of the things I've been requesting is we need compression. We need more compression on the vocals. And we need to like up the reverb, like through the bus that's getting to our ears. And we need to be able to control it separately. But the compression thing, and I see vocalists do this a lot. When I used to like lead a band, I would run into this, especially with female vocalists. If they're singing with a male, the timbre of their voice makes it easy for them to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're mixing themselves, they put themselves hot and they come way back off the mic.
Oh.
And they mix to their ear, right? So they have themselves hot. So then they come way back off the mic so that the harmony that they're singing sounds right to them. They're not too loud, because if there's an instrument or a person making a sound that is going to be the most disciplined about not being too loud, it's going to be like the harmony vocalist, because he or she wants to hear not only like a melodic instrument like the piano, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like if I'm singing, I want to hear some, it's actually tough to get a good mix when you're playing the electric guitar and singing. Because a lot of times you want an acoustic guitar or keys louder.
It's amazing how loud you have to have your own voice.
To really feel it. Yeah, really for sure.
Hear it. Yeah.
But a harmony vocalist will want to hear the melody person and some melodic instrument and themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll tend to come way back, you know. And then what that means is that the soundboard doesn't get a good constant signal.
Right.
Right. And they use this play a ton on their mic. And that mic technique is really difficult. Like the pros should do that. Everybody else just, you know what I mean? We should compress the heck out of those vocals, because then what happens is the way we have it set up is like, and how most churches have it set up is that that woman, that girl is doing harmonies on the first two songs, and then she's got to go belt some part at a song where she's got song three, and then she eats the mic. She's way on it.
Right.
And everyone else has to make this decision of like, well, how loud or low do I want you? So if it's not super compressed, then it messes everybody up.
So this also gets into...
And then they always go... like they'll listen to the mixes and go, you can't hear the vocalists.
Right.
It's like, well, you're coming way back and then you're going way on and way back. It's like, it's hard to.
No, absolutely. That's why, you know, I was taught like you basically put the microphone like against your face all the time.
Right.
But here's the problem is if you do that, now it's up to the sound guy to put you in the right spot.
Right.
Right. And not all sound guys are created equal, and that, you know, I think that's, you could argue too that that's actually the most important role of the whole morning, right? Because I can rehearse and rehearse and rehearse, but if I go up there and I play my heart out and I play everything perfectly, but you can't hear me, what's, you know, and that can be really frustrating.
Stephen Curtis Chapman just won some Dove Award.
Mm.
And it was a guy who plays a Kemper, who's a buddy of ours, who is the only guy who went up with him. It's his guitar player. He produced the record. You're right. It's the most important thing. Like on a record, like the producer is as important as the artist.
Absolutely.
As the sound guy has to be.
And you know, a little bit of production know-how goes a long way for ear mixes too. Like being able to understand like, well, maybe it's better to, you know, pan a guitar to the right or something instead of having everything right in the middle.
Maybe I should take things away rather than turning myself up.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good thing, right?
It's a type of thing too. Like vocalists, I think, learn this quickly. Guitar players may not always learn it very quickly. It's just that thing is taking something away can be really valuable. You know, like turn the drums down. Turn the bass down, right? Like if you're a vocalist, what's important is the more melodic instruments, whatever's like really carrying, whatever's going to be supporting the melody. Mm-hmm. Acoustic guitar, even the electric guitar doesn't need to be very, acoustic guitar and keys are like your best friend.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, it depends on what you're doing. Depends on what your role is.
For guitar, I feel like, what's funny is when I have done these little playthroughs with the Sues, mm-hmm. he wants the click so hot, his guitar hot, and the track not that hot.
Mm.
And I can imagine what his monitor mix sounds like.
Yeah.
Because we tried doing those without the click. That guy plays with a click. Like, you can tell. He day plays with a click.
Yeah.
And so...
Well, once you get used to it...
Then you live by the click, you know? Yeah.
And then, and in fact, I've been playing drums a lot. And it's really... So I had Suze make me some tracks without mm-hmm. drums.
Yeah. Very cool.
So that I could play with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? And those have the click pretty loud and then the track pretty loud. But then when I go to, it's like, you know, I only have like a dozen of those or whatever. Mm-hmm. I get bored with them. So I go put on some country or something like that to play along with.
Yeah, right.
It's so different to like not, well, A, when there's already drums, but B, when there's no click, it's like, it's so different. Once you are used to playing with a click, you know, it's almost more difficult not mm-hmm. to.
Yeah.
Some people are afraid of it, but...
I find myself turning the drums down a bit. Mm-hmm. And really, when I'm the only guitar player, I pan the keys one side and myself the other.
Mm-hmm.
And we could talk about this more in another another episode or something. But I am a firm believer that mono is the way to go. At least in your in-ears.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel like live anyway. I don't think stereo is as valuable as people make it out to be. I think it's fun to listen to, but mm-hmm. I got to get James Duke to come over sometime because he, you know, I asked him about this and his take was like, I've never met a producer that wanted me to have like multiple takes of these super wide things on the track. He's like, they always
live
or on a, you know, nobody wants six takes of a guitar, like all the, you know what I mean? It's sure. like once they start overdubbing, mm-hmm. like they want you to mono anyway. And then they're going to put pieces around.
Interesting.
Maybe there's a part they want. But
I think it's... Well, I think it's just... For praise and worship, maybe.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I would even say there, if you're going to have more than one guitar player, you're probably not going to get left stereo in the mix anyway. You know what I mean?
Sure.
They're going to pan you in some way. Maybe they'll let some of you go to the other side or whatever. If you're the only guitar player, I get it. But in my mix, I want to hear the keys and myself mm-hmm. separately
mm-hmm.
because the guy that I play with right now, his name's Sebastian. He's kind of our main dude right now. He's super talented.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch of gospel chops.
Mm-hmm.
So he's always harmonizing with me. He's always throwing in stuff. He'll double me all the time, or he'll play some different thing. He's always listening to me,
mm-hmm.
and I'm always listening to him. And we don't need to talk; we just play.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, we'll laugh about something or say something. You know, we had this one moment in church where the pastor wanted to pray over all the kids who were going to start kindergarten and mm-hmm. all the kids who were leaving high school, right? Mm-hmm. Like kids starting school and kids leaving school.
Sure.
So all these moms are crying, you know, and. Sebastian's job is to what? Like hold down a G chord.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden you hear bum, 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 bum. Like Jesus loves the little children of the world, right?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like he's throwing in this like very funny, right? And I'm like laughing because it's just a,
right.
You know, like, like thing, and but there's a slight melody going over it, you know?
Right.
And, you know, later we laugh about
subtle.
That. Yeah, yeah, just subtle stuff, you know, or whatever. Well, you know, we'll, I don't know, there'll be something.
Well, that's fun. I mean, it's so fun to have other musicians that you can actually, like, play off of each other.
Yeah.
Because that's way more fun than like, being in your own world. And
yeah.
And I think that's, you know.
What's funny is he says to me, he's like, I need to get some notes from you on mm-hmm. your delay and reverbs, like what you're doing to get those sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes I'll go to an ambient sound so big that it if you weren't looking at me, you might think it was just coming from the keyboard.
Right.
And I start doubling one of his parts when there is no guitar. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or I just know it's like a pad for a little bit. And I'll just add some octave thing up where I have like a shimmer thing, right? And he's not doing it. But I'm just like getting into his territory and then he starts getting into mine.
I think that's, I mean, that's a hard thing to, that's a hard balance to find sometimes.
Sure.
You know,
like you got to get along with the people too.
Yeah. Where does the guitar, because a lot of the stuff that we do on guitar nowadays could be done on the keyboard.
So much of it is just trying to sound like other instruments. Yeah. like a keyboard, like a pad, right?
Yeah.
And then it lands in this middle spot. What's weird to me is as I was talking to him recently about it, he was like, how are you getting that sound? He asked me about one sound. Mm-hmm. And it was a sound like in a worship song that's super washed out guitar. Mm-hmm. And honestly, on the record, I don't know if it's keys or guitar or what. Mm-hmm. And I said, I was talking to him about stacking delays. And he's like, that's like a foreign thing to mm-hmm. a keyboard player. You know what I mean? They're not stacking delays. Why would you do that? But we do it because it helps you get further towards something that's like a keyboard. But what's weird is that in our failure to actually sound like the keys, we end up at this cool sound of ambient guitar.
Right. It becomes its own thing.
Yeah. And then a keyboard player might want to emulate that even because it's cool.
Hey, tell you what, actually, I was really nervous about selling my timeline.
Yeah.
Really nervous.
You've had that a long time.
I've had it a very long time. 8 years?
Yeah.
I've been using a timeline and a Big Sky for...
It's longer than you have children. Is that longer than you have
children? No. Almost longer.
About
the same.
Okay, yeah.
Anyway. Uh-huh.
Oh, right. My kids are...
Seven. Yeah, there you go. Your kids are younger than mine. Yeah. The Kemper does an absolutely fantastic job with delays. Mm-hmm. Way, way, way better than I had given it credit for previously. The ability to like stack delays, the ability to pan delays serial and
to go to 200%.
It's great.
Stereo, whatever
that
means.
And then there's this setting on there where the repeats, they like, you can set like a frequency.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because if you, and you should, I don't know, you've probably done, maybe you've done a tip and trick about this.
I haven't if really, because I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
I think you should, because it's a way that you can, I mean, I've got repeats on like my biggest setting. Mm-hmm. They last for days.
Right.
I mean, it's crazy town.
Yeah.
But it totally works because they're not overpowering. Mm-hmm. Because there's like these frequencies that are getting canceled out and stuff. And so it's not like it's
It just gets lost in this wash. Right. And then when you stack so it, it's more it into a
it's
verb.
Yeah, it's yeah. more than just the it's more than just the repeats getting quieter. Mm-hmm. It's like they're losing their frequencies slowly but surely also. And so they're kind of fading into nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the ability to send either, to not send the repeats to the reverb also, you know, or to only, there's a bunch of different ways you can do it.
Yeah.
It's genius. It's so good.
The delays are so good, I think. And to be honest, the Strymon stuff is great. The timeline is probably the weakest of that duo, right? Mm. The Big Sky, I feel like, still has settings in there that are Big Sky worthy.
Yeah.
But the timeline, although it was a great pedal, I feel like there's a lot of pedals that are now doing what it's doing. You know what I'm saying?
Better than what it does.
Yeah, or even just to the same. I mean, what's...
Well, even like the Nemesis delay where you can have two delays.
Yeah.
It's like...
And I mean, we're all getting... There's great tapes out there. There's great analog. There's great... You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I feel like the verbs are more where people are getting really picky about stuff.
The way that I use the timeline is... Like one night here, we had set up your
AC30 and the Bella.
Your Memory Man.
Yeah.
And we set up the timeline, and we got the timeline to sound as close as possible to the Memory Man.
Yeah.
And then I saved that setting and I used it for 2 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Now people are going to ask for that setting.
Yeah. And then, you know, but I don't think I have it anymore. Because I think I...
Did you back it up?
Probably.
But I think the Sioux does.
Probably.
Yeah.
And then, like, on the Big Sky, Sioux made, like, a Dispatchmaster mm-hmm. patch. That's a, what, who makes that? Earthquaker Devices yep. or something yep. like that? Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, that was my favorite one, but now this does that too. So that's kind of what I use those pedals for. It's like yeah. they were so versatile that they mm-hmm. could almost replicate any other pedal out
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
Except for when you wanted to start stacking delays.
Right, right. Because
then you couldn't.
Right. You didn't have enough. Yeah.
Yeah. But that always bothered me that, I mean, they had the
dual delay.
Engine. The dual delay, mm-hmm. but that was it. But that was, it was pretty limited.
Mm-hmm. You know? Agreed. All right, let's end it here, and we'll get into on the next episode. We'll get into this is a good segue. We'll get into copying pedals from one device to another because like we've been copying pedals into the Kemper with the Kemper KOT and the Kemper Klon, and delay settings are kind of next. I kind of want to do an AB and dial in my Deluxe Memory Man, and I've got some requests to do the 1981. So that's how we'll probably do that soon. All right. This has been, I've been HW.
I've been John, too.
And thank you so much for listening to the Tone Junkie Podcast. Again, you can pick up the Tone Junkie Loaded Kemper available at British Audio exclusively. It's the same price as a normal Kemper, but it has a free Tone Junkie everything pack with it. It's the best deal in the Kemperverse.
The best deal ever.
HW and John, out.
Bye.